He wants to meet you by the central airlock here at the end cap. Tavallera suddenly lunged at the tracker, shouting wildly, "Run, Holly!" as he tackled the Ethiopian. The two men went down in a tangle of arms and legs. Holly hesitated an instant, long enough to see that Raoul was no fighter. The Ethiopian quickly recovered from his surprise and threw Tavallera off his back, then scrambled to his feet. Before he could do anything, Holly launched herself in a flying kick that caught the tracker in the ribs and knocked him down again. Tavallera got up and grabbed for her hand. The bolt of a laser beam knocked him down again. Tavallera grabbed his leg with both hands as he rolled on the ground in pain. Shit, the same friggin' leg! Holly froze into immobility. Raoul's leg wasn't bleeding much, but a pinprick of a black hole smoldered halfway up his thigh. The Ethiopian got slowly to his feet as the three other security officers ran across the grassy rise toward them. "How'd they get weapons into the habitat?" Holly asked, sinking to her knees beside the writhing, cursing Tavallera. "Cutting tools," Tavallera grunted, grimacing. "They must have adapted laser tools into sidearms." The leader of the three newcomers looked over the situation. "Good work," he said to the Ethiopian. Gesturing to his two underlings, he said, "Haul this one to his feet and drag him along." They grabbed Tavallera, not gently at all. "Come along," the leader said to Holly. "Colonel Kananga wants to see you at the central airlock."
The only thing that truly worried Gaeta was being cut off from communicating with Fritz. The suit was holding up all right, although the interior temperature had definitely dropped nearly 3 degrees. Gaeta was thinking of his possible alternatives as he drifted, wrapped in ice, mummified cryogenically. Wonderly thinks the ice particles are alive. Maybe she's right. They sure looked like they were crawling across my faceplate. So maybe they're trying to eat me, eat the suit. Can they eat Cermet? Or organometallics? Jesus, I hope not. Wait for another 11 hours so they can get video of me? I could be dead by then. But if I bug out now, there won't be any video to show the Nets. Funny, he thought, how the mind works. Right here in the middle of this mierda, what does my brain come up with? He who fights and runs away lives to fight another day. These rings have existed for thousands of years, millions more likely. They're not going away. I can come back. With better preparation, better equipment, and better video coverage. That decided him. Gaeta pulled his right arm out of its sleeve and set up the thruster program. I'll be flying blind, he realized. He had lost all sense of where he was in relation to the habitat or to Timoshenko, waiting for him in the shuttlecraft. The suit's navigation program was useless now. Better take it slow and easy. First priority is to get your butt out of this blizzard. But don't go blasting off to Alpha Centauri. He touched the keypad that fired the thruster jets. Nothing happened.
Eberle had taken over Professor Wilmot's old office, now that he was officially the habitat's chief administrator. His first official act was to send Wilmot's stuffy old furniture to storage and replace it with sleek, modernistic chrome and plastic, bleached and stained to look like teak. He had hardly sat at his gleaming desk when Morgenthau pushed open the door to his office and stepped in unannounced. Dressed in a flamboyant, rainbow-hued caftan, she looked around the office's bare walls with a smug, self-satisfied smile that was close to being a smirk. "You'll need to get some pictures on these walls," she said. "I'll see that you get some hollow windows that can be programmed." "I can decorate my own office," Eberle snapped. Her expression didn't change at all. "Don't be touchy. Now that you have the power, you should surround yourself with the proper trappings of power. Symbols are important. Just ask Viborg. He knows all about the importance of symbolism." "I have a lot of work to do," Eberle said. "You have to meet with Kananga." Eberle shook his head. "It's not on my agenda." "He's waiting for you at the central airlock, out at the end cap." "I'm not going. He has Holly in custody. He wants you there for her trial and execution."
Drumhead. Blinded by the ice coating his suit, his communications antennas blocked, the temperature inside the suit dropping, Gaeta mulled over his options. The thrusters won't fire, he realized, and I don't know why. The diagnostic display splashed on the inside of his faceplate showed the propulsion system was in the green. Engineer's hell, he muttered to himself. Everything checks, but nothing works. The suit's diagnostics were bare bones. Fritz had a better idea of what was going on than he did, Gaeta knew. He's got the details. He's even got the positioning data that feeds my nav program. All I've got is a comm link that doesn't work. Gaeta had one last trick in his repertoire. If this doesn't work, I'll be a frozen dinner for these chingado ice bugs, he told himself. He popped the suit's emergency antenna. The spring-loaded buckyball wire cracked through the ice shell and whizzed out the full length of its 100 meters. Gaeta felt the vibration inside the suit, like the faint buzz of an electric razor. Fritz, can you hear me? He called. Manny, Fritz's voice replied immediately. What's your situation? The diagnostics here are a blur. Suit antennas iced over, Gaeta replied, slipping automatically into the clipped, time-saving argot of pilots and ground controllers. Thrusters won't fire. Life support? Okay for now. Thrusters, man. I've got to get out of here. Have you tried the backup? Of course I've tried the backup. It's like everything's frozen solid. Wonderly's voice interrupted. Crank up your suit's heaters. The heaters? Run them up as high as you can stand it, she said. The ice bugs probably don't like high temperatures. Probably doesn't sound like much help, Gaeta said. Try it, Fritz commanded. Gaeta knew the suit's electrical power came from a nuclear thermionic generator. Plenty of electricity available for the heaters. Reluctantly, he said, okay. Going into sauna mode.
Holly was more worried about Tavalera's leg than her own prospects. Two of the black-clad security people were dragging Raoul up the slope toward the central airlock. He looked to be in shock, his face white, his teeth gritted. It was foolish of him to try to help me, Holly thought. Foolish and very brave. With the Ethiopian in the lead, they climbed the gentle rise, feeling the odd decrease in gravity as they got closer to the habitat's centerline. Holly wondered if she could use the confusing loss of gravity as a weapon, but there were four of Kananga's people and only herself and the wounded Tavalera to counter them. She couldn't leave Raoul in their clutches, no matter what lay ahead. "Why are you taking us here?" Holly demanded. "Just following orders," said the burly leader of the security team. "Orders? Whose orders?" "Colonel Kananga's. He wants to meet you at the central airlock."
Eberly groused and grumbled, but he realized he had no choice but to accompany Morgenthau to this meeting with Kananga. "What else can I do?" he asked himself. "I'm nothing more than a figurehead. She holds the real power. She and Kananga and that viper Viborg. If it hadn't been for him and his stupid ambition, none of this would have happened. I've won power for them, not myself." He meekly followed Morgenthau to the bike racks outside the administration building and mounted one of the electrically powered bicycles. From the rear, Morgenthau looked like a hippopotamus riding the bike. He noted that she hardly pedaled at all, even on the flat. Instead, she let the quiet little electrical motor propel her along. "I hope she runs out of battery power by the time we have to start climbing," Eberly thought viciously. But she made it, all the way to the end cap and the hatch that led to the central airlock, Eberly dutifully following behind her. They left the bikes in the racks at the hatch and entered the cold, dimly lit steel tunnel that led to the airlock. As the hatch swung shut behind them, Eberly looked over his shoulder, like a prisoner taking his last glimpse of the outside world before the gates close on his freedom. He saw a small group of people trudging up the slope toward the hatch. Three of them were in the black tunics of the security forces. The tall, slim figure in their midst looked like Holly. He didn't recognize the even taller man in a tan outfit walking up ahead of the others. Two of the security people were dragging a man who was clearly injured. Then the hatch closed, and Eberly felt the chill of the cold steel tunnel seep into his bones. "Come along," said Morgenthau. "Kananga's waiting for us at the airlock. Viborg is there, too." Wondering what else he could do, Eberly followed her like a desperately unhappy little boy being dragged to school.
Gaeta blinked sweat from his eyes. He had reeled in the emergency antenna and fired it out again, twice. Each time it had given him about 5 minutes of clear communications before the ice creatures